shoots, scores! DK wins it for an end round!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Happy break with the MLS action. It is a break for me. As you guys know, I do a lot of work over at MLS Now Podcast. The content never stops, though, and we will be recording podcasts, of course, throughout the little interval, as our next game is 16 days away. June 15th, we face off against New England Revolution in New England. So there's a little bit of break there, but again, there will be episodes to discuss some stuff and gonna have some guests on for that. So that's gonna be fun. In the meantime, we have we have to look back. As fun as it is to look forward, we have to look back at the 3-1 defeat at home to FC Dallas. Here to dive into it with me is Daniel. Daniel, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. A couple things. First of all, I'm happy to say that I'm no longer 27th choice of your pick to come on tonight. I moved up to 25th choice. I think that Eddie's cat and some random woman from the hairdressers was probably ahead of me, but they kind of dropped out, I think. So that's a good thing. I moved up. My self-esteem's a lot better now. And secondly, I can tell that you're a podcaster because you do what they all do. You say what's going on at the beginning of every video and every chat that you do. Just an observation I want to make. Because I've been watching some YouTube videos and everyone says what's going on at the beginning. Every single one. It's funny.
It just rolls off the tongue. I think it's the best way to introduce, but clearly experienced podcaster at this point. Coming up on almost three years of Lions Blog? Oh, June 2019
is when survived. I started. You've survived. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I think I got involved, December that year or something like that. So
yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of when it went downhill, I think, for you.
And then Chase, and then Adam. Yeah, it's been a roller coaster. Loved every second of it, though.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, look, you moved ahead of Eddie's cat because of the scuffle Eddie and I got in at the game.
Oh my goodness, that was quite heated. I was sat in the middle of that, and there's nothing more thrilling than being stuck between two people arguing over a right back. I think I've been between women fighting before. I've been between politicians fighting. I've been between people arguing about nationalities, but it never got as intense as that. That was just, and even like Eddie's little response at the end when he whispered into my ear, "I told you Juan was better." I thought it was just funny.
He's referencing so Daniel. Daniel and Eddie have their seats next to each other, and Daniel was gracious enough to invite me to the game with his other season ticket. And so Daniel, Eddie, and I, from Eddie from Orlando Lions Den podcast, as I'm sure all of you know, if you listen to them, you listen to us is kind of the way I take it. But if not, Eddie from Orlando Lions Den podcast was there with Daniel and I, and we were watching the game together, and him and I were having a it's not heated, we weren't mad at each other or anything, but we were having a preferential discussion, is the way that I phrased it, about right backs, Juan versus Kyle Smith, as I tend to get into the right back because I think it's a big there could be a big shift in our tactics depending on who the right back is, but we're not going to get into that tonight. We've talked that to death, but that's what we were referencing there. Eddie, obviously, for Mr. Juan, wanting him on the field, and I'm wanting a certain Kyle Smith at right back. Obviously, Kyle Smith was at center back tonight, but yeah. All right, let's get into the match, and I think the best place to start is before we have to talk about the doom and gloom, Daniel. Jake Mulroney getting his first start. Playing that left wing role, the left wing role given to anybody who's been out there this season, which is you're a left winger first and foremost. You can cut in sometimes, but basically you're a pretty standard up and down left winger. How did you think Jake looked in his full debut?
First half, I thought it was good. I mean, his individual performance was good. He had a couple of tricks. I watched him fairly close, and he had all the good traits of an intelligent footballer. He took a look at where the ball was, made his little run, and the players seemed to know where he was going to go, which was obviously something that was planned, worked on in practice or whatever. And he stretched the field a little bit as well, which I think was important. And it's no coincidence, really, that I think we looked a lot better when he was on the field stretching from stretching the pitch out a little bit. To I think he went off sometime before 60 minutes, if I recall correctly. And the team's shape kind of fell apart after that point as well. So the game plan with him in there worked, and having some natural balance on that left definitely benefited the team, giving more options to play the ball quickly and out wide, which we saw a lot in the first half. So I was really impressed with him. I think he may only got out of the game just for match fitness or something, but he looked very good, I thought.
Yeah, it came out 57 minutes for Facundo Torres, which I was actually really surprised to see. Not because, Facundo Torres was bad or anything, but Facundo Torres has been playing a lot of soccer. This was Jake's first game for us. He hasn't been playing a lot of soccer. There's been no reported injuries, and he was looking fine out there. And taking off 57th minute, we weren't chasing the game, so weird substitution for me personally. But yeah, we were using him as an in-behind threat, like you said, to kind of stretch the game a bit, and he was doing pretty good at it. My takeaways are he's got a pretty decent first touch. He can put a decent cross in. He likes to cross early, likes to cross often. And I didn't really see any of the one of my biggest things, Daniel, I've talked about on here was defensively. He'll just be a body, but he won't be much else back there. I didn't really see that at all. But he really wasn't. We weren't really put under much pressure. But yeah. Anything else on Jake Moreni?
No, I mean, I'd be interested to see him certainly play more. Certainly as an alternative as a left wing back as well. Playing with three centre backs. I think he could, the right system could certainly be a good, shrewd signing. I'm not sure how much they paid for him now. I don't remember, but I don't think they paid a great deal
cheap.
To get him. Yeah.
Low thousands of GAM. Low hundreds of thousands of GAM, I should say.
Well, it's a good signing. It's a smart signing. I think, you've got, a player there that can play on the left, on the right. And be pretty versatile. So hopefully he gets a few more chances.
Yeah. I think he's no different than a Benji Michel in that role in terms of offensive output. And in terms, it's just really defensively for me where it's like maybe Benji's a little bit better there. But with Benji out, it's good to have him as an option. And with many other players out, it's good to have him as an option.
Certainly.
Yep. All right, I guess let's get into the doom and gloom because that was really all I had for just other topics. And I guess let's talk game management, as I think that's where I feel the game kind of slipped away from us. There's a lot of caveats going around, Daniel. Three games.
A lot of caveat, you said, can I get some of this caviar?
Caveats.
Yeah, because posh people don't usually like people like me. So if they got some caviar going spare, I'll have it.
No, unfortunately not that. Caveats. Excuses, maybe? Not excuses. I think that's a heavily connotated word. But reasons as to why this happened. People searching for answers. Yeah. And the answer is 3 games, 8 days, 9 men against Austin, 120 minutes against Miami, penalties, the whole shebang, injuries. Everyone's heard them all. We are 1-0 up heading into the 66th minute of the match. were completely in control of the match. We had a great start to the second half. How do you balance knowing that we were in control and we were really we on a different day we would have seen this game out, but also knowing that we had all those reasons to possibly capitulate like we did. How do you balance that in your mind?
I have expectations for any team I support. I mean, if you're going to be a good team, you've got to learn to deal with circumstances. That's we saw this. We watched some of the Liverpool Real Madrid game before we went to the match together, and Real Madrid, for lack of a better term, they shithoused a win. You could argue they shithoused it, but they shithoused it. That's the thing. Like they had to defend a lot of shots. They had to deal with a lot of attacks, but they somehow managed to, contrive and get a result. And a good team will do it. A good team's not going to come out and start saying, "Oh, well, we're okay with, with losing our fourth home MLS game in 13, matches in the MLS because we're just going to win the Open Cup, so it's okay." Reminds me of 2019 when fans were just assuming that after winning like two or three home games all season, Orlando was going to magically take 10 out of 12 points in the run into that end of that season. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do. What was that, 2019?
2019. Like
Yeah.
they were going to just magically come up and just,
So we were
somehow.
facing like Cincinnati and I think Montreal and some other bad teams, and we just
Well, New
didn't.
England were bad at that time, I think. And point is they didn't take anywhere near 10 out of 12 points. I remember quite a few people saying it like it was just a given, and a lot of people are talking now about the Open Cup. Oh, well, it's okay, we'll just win the Open Cup. Yeah, because if it's that easy, Orlando would have won it before, right? I think it's dangerous to go off the assumption that you're going to win a cup and you sacrifice your league play to get that result. I think you should. Orlando's still a relatively young football team. Like, if you're building your team, then your league has got to be your bread and butter. That should be your priority. And yeah, there was 3 games in 8 days, but you went full, you went full heavy metal for the Miami game midweek, and put almost his best team out. I don't think the performance was great. Certainly not, vindicative of the decision to put the best team out in a cup game. I would rather have the points in the league. And when you're playing, other rivals that are not in your conference like we are with Dallas, then 3 points there I think is even more of a bonus because it's like a free hit, but one with a lot of upside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, a lot of bonus there.
So I don't buy it. I'm sorry, but like I just can't accept the defeatism of fans that are like, "Oh, I'm okay, we lost this." Because I saw that, a few people were getting criticized, for speaking up against it or whatever. But I'd have to argue, are you a true fan if you're happy losing? Because if you have to care enough, I think, if your team loses, it should bother you. Bothered me. Certainly bothered me sitting in traffic both directions to get to the game and back, spending my money to go there, sitting there, stayed to the very end. And it's annoying. It's annoying to see the capitulation because I can accept when a team is just better than your own team. I can understand that. That's reasonable. I just don't think Dallas were that much better. And the capitulation was predictable. It's the same capitulation we've seen a few times now this season. And a good team with any aspirations of winning the Supporters' Shield, which is a marathon, first of all, isn't going to start tripping over the hurdles. The hurdles you should be able to clear are your home games. And, you've let in 4 goals against LA, we've let in 3 against Cincinnati, 3 against New York, 3 against Dallas.
Two against Cincinnati, but
Was it two? Was it two? Okay, I
it was
find
two.
it was
But you're
two,
fine.
yes, you're right.
Sorry.
But even so, like, it's very leaky, the defence is just very leaky. It's like, yeah, Exploria is a fortress, and everyone wants to talk it up and say, "Oh, yeah, Exploria is a fortress, best fans in the league." But this fortress is made out of toilet paper. And it's like one of those kiddie fortresses with a little flag at the top,
It's a
that blows
sand
away.
castle.
Yeah, it's not a fortress. And until fans are more expectant, and you know, maybe they should expect a better result. I don't think, as a fan or anyone logically, you can really reconcile in your head how you're winning after 67 minutes and you just capitulate in the way that we did. And tiredness is not the excuse, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. I can see that the tiredness aspect, like, but that only takes me so far.
What about the suspensions argument? I mean, everyone's acting like, oh, well, we have all these suspensions. Yeah, but no one tells Schlegel to get himself booked every game. Nobody tells Janssen to run his mouth every game. No one tells Araujo to, commit a cynical red foul tackle.
I mean, the Schlegel one, I think we all agreed was harsh.
It was harsh, but
it was a double yellow, so like...
It was harsh, but then Schlegel seems to always be involved in something as well. So
I mean, yeah.
So it's like, he doesn't get much sympathy from me, you know?
Yeah, and I think game management has been an issue, and that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get into that, I do see it, but the position we were in changes the scenario for me. Again, mm-hmm. heading into the last 25 minutes of the match, 1-0 up, we were competitive, we were dominant. We weren't necessarily, I think we were creating our best chances of the game
mm-hmm.
in that period after the second half. But then we didn't capitalize, and we just kind of got sloppy. That's the way I've been wording it. It's just with Perea, the giveaway, just not checking his shoulder, turns into the midfield, loses it. They go up the field. Things happen
mm-hmm.
and instantly score. And it's like, how many times is this going to happen where we lose the ball in that central zone in the pitch? And then it just instantly turns into a goal. Like, Dallas weren't really dangerous at all on the night until that happened. And for me, it was just the sloppiness that really frustrated me. You said something when you were talking about you care about the league
mm-hmm.
and more than like the cup, and you care about the 3 points. And it's like, I think that's maybe where some people differ with you is, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just people's preferences and people's opinions, that some people want to go for the easiest route to a trophy. And right now people are looking at Nashville, I think, is our next opponent, Miami. So we were looking at Miami, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's a derby. They want to win that. It's at home. We need to go all out for that. We need to go all out for the Open Cup because we have Nashville. If we beat Miami, which is many people think would be a winnable game, then it's New York City. I don't know how winnable that is. I think it's New York City
mm-hmm.
or New England. But with the way that's going, that would be New York City. And then if we were to somehow get past New York City, we're into the final. And so like it's a very quick route to a trophy. So I can see why people think like, and not only is it a trophy, it's a CONCACAF Champions League slot as well now. So it's a big deal. Not mm-hmm. saying it's not. And of course, I want us to go for a trophy, too. I think the 3 points in the league are also important, though. I lean towards the, yes, Open Cup was good. We should still try and put out a competitive team to win that game. But could we have managed the people that played a little bit better? Right, Facundo Torres mm-hmm. went 116 minutes, I think. He was needed. He was really needed on that pitch.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Don't get me wrong. We should have buried chances that we did not play well. I agree. So I think I'm just rambling at this point. But yeah, Open Cup versus League, I think that's where the difference lies for a lot mm-hmm. of people. Is are they okay with sacrificing a league game for the Open Cup? And I think what I'm saying in the midst of all of this is, why does it have to be a sacrifice? Why can't we win both?
That's exactly my point. Why shouldn't you be wanting to win both? I mean, a defeat was always possible. I'm not stupid. Like, I get that. But that just seeing how sort of blasé some people are about it. And if it was the first home defeat of the season, it wouldn't have been much of a concern, but it's four home defeats. And when you look at each of those games, I mean, there's terminal failures within the system for each of those games, you know? Like, to me, what I saw against Dallas was very similar to what we were seeing at the end of the Jason Kreis run, I think, where the team would be dominant, would be playing well, would be on the front foot, and then it would be just one mistake, would just let somebody in, score a goal, and then it would just be a complete, collapse afterwards, you know? And this collapse was not just one mistake by Pereira. It was three mistakes, you could argue, for each goal. So it's just, I mean, I look more at patterns than I do results, because I generally believe that, greater patterns will, in the long term, lead to better results, more consistent results. Some people are more result orientated, which, fair enough, but I don't think results can necessarily form a pattern. I think patterns form results. So.
Well, let's talk about a pattern that's really been bothering me for a couple of years now. And it's the way we manage games. Honestly, one of the biggest reasons why I loved the Columbus match so much this season is I thought we managed it really well. We were in complete control the whole 90, 2-0 win on the road, had some beautiful play for the second goal for Erchikara, and we didn't make anything too difficult for ourselves, but I can list off a number of games in the past 2 seasons, last season and this early on this season, where we were in control, we were in the driver's seat, and we threw it away. New England comes to mind. The 2-2 draw, we were 2-0 up at home, they put their starters in, and we didn't hold on to it. The Montreal match at home in the run-in, we were 1-0 up. That Montreal come in and score again, we tie 1-1. Excuse me. The Nashville 1-1. Everyone likes to talk about the free kick, but we were up 1-0 in that game. Weren't able to hold on and see that out. The Nashville playoff game, we were 1-0 up. Lose the ball. They get a deflected goal, a little lucky, but still weren't able to hold on to it. Look at this season. Orlando City 2, even in matches we've won, right? So even another example in my head is I think we beat Philadelphia at home 2-1 last season, I think.
I
We
think
were
so.
up 2-0, we were cruising. Shabilko scores a goal, I think it was, and then they nearly got a second. And so, again, even in games we're winning, these games, we're making them harder for ourselves a lot of the time. We're not managing the game well. I don't know if we're struggling to play with a lead or what, but even going into this season, guys, just for some more examples, right? Orlando City 2, Montreal 0, first game of the season. They get a red card. What do? We go get ourselves a red card with Janssen. So it's not as easy as a game. We still see it out 2-0, but yeah. LA Galaxy, we go 1-0 up. LA Galaxy had a bunch of chances. We just grinded out the storm. Portland, we're winning. We're up. They have a red card, give away a penalty. You look at the Charlotte match, 2-0 up. We give them a penalty, 2-1. Philadelphia in the Open Cup, we're up 2-0. They score a kind of random goal, 2-1. Like, time after time after time after time. Even Austin, yes, we got screwed, but Araujo lost his head completely. And now here we're up 1-0, finishing the game 3-1. I just listed out a ton of examples, Daniel. We have a game management problem. Where are we struggling in game management in these scenarios? What's going on here?
The quick answer, without kind of psychoanalyzing everything, including the coach and the players, because honestly, that's kind of what we have to do to figure it out. And I don't know. For me, it's first of all, there's a lack of leadership on the field. I still think, obviously the loss of Antonio Carlos is big. You know, he's probably the only player at the back who probably has the discipline and the organisational skills, I think, to handle anything. And, you know, the team should have been looking at bringing in another centre-back. I think I said that last season. They needed another top starting centre-back, you know.
And yep, you did.
So, again, that's been proven to be true. And everyone likes the nice, shiny attacking signings, but the club really needs to spend some money on another defender. You know, and, you know, they've got all these international slots tied up on attackers. It's like, you know, the team's struggling still. So that's my first point. And then I think the second one is that Oscar doesn't have a solid plan B. I don't think he knows how to get the team playing a different way. And I think it's always dangerous with a game plan that revolves around trying to get in the lead and then just sitting back on it. You know, we talked about the Mulroney substitution. Like, again, you know, he took the, you know, just right before that change, we'd had all those opportunities that were right in front of us. Remember the one cleared off the line and the one that was Janssen's shot deflected.
Yep.
You know, so they were doing well. Like, it was like, was it a change was made for change's sake, you know? And, you know, I just think he's got this, I think he maybe overthinks it sometimes and just doesn't play to the players' best strengths. And we have a personnel problem, like I said, with the centre-backs and defending in transition as well. We just don't have a secondary game plan. I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, and I do sometimes feel, and I'm sure he has reasons for each of his substitutions, but I do sometimes feel he's making changes for change's sake. For example, against Miami, and we didn't do a pod after the Miami pod, but one of the talking points, or after the Miami game, but one of the talking points for me would have been Moutinho coming on for Kyle Smith, because I thought Kyle Smith was having a really good game, personally. He was making tackles. He was really doing well down that left side. Wasn't really struggling at all. Hasn't played a ton of soccer. And João Moutinho, who he's giving a rest to, comes in midway through the second half, I want to say. And I thought João Moutinho had a poor game, personally, against Miami. And it was like, why did you take Smith off? What, like for me, the candidate would have been take Juan off. Because you can't know that João Moutinho is going to have a poor game. But I thought Juan was kind of eh. Like, I thought a lot of players were eh, but Juan definitely. And Juan's always blowing after 60, 70 minutes now. Like almost every game. I mean, he's being asked to do a lot. He's being, let's not beat around the bush, Pareja is asking Juan to do a lot of running game in, game out. So I don't blame him for being tired, but he is tired after 70 minutes, really, every game. I think the right sub maybe could have been Smith for Juan, and then, or sorry, Moutinho for Juan, and then you move Smith over to the right, everything's fine. Kyle Smith hasn't played a lot of soccer this season. Juan gets an extended rest before a big game on the weekend, and then a lot of people are saying, well, Juan's transition defense against Dallas was horrible. Well, he's probably tired. Because he went, I think, 115, he might have gotten pulled off at the 90 and Halliday came in. Because, yeah, at the end of the 90, Juan was dead on his feet. But still, he went the full 90. I don't know. He almost went the full 90 against whatever they're called, Austin. So, like, could that have been a different sub? Could we have managed the players a little bit better? And that was something I recorded a podcast, Daniel, with a Dallas fan when we got Pareja. And one of the criticisms he had was how he managed and rotated his players. And I'm sorry, but that is, I think that's a fair criticism to give to Pareja. And do you think that has, Do you think that's hindering our ability to manage games because our players are running out of gas because they're not being managed correctly?
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good conclusion. I think, like you said, there's natural substitutions you can make. And again, I come back to the Cup game. There's players like Halliday and Williams that could have used the minutes, could have benefited from the minutes. You know, if you've got a small roster with very, you know, low quality depth, then I come back to it again. You need to prioritize the league. You know, until you get your roster right and you get enough quality players in and perhaps a coach that's willing to change them around a little bit more, then, you know, you can't be flogging these guys, you know, three games in the week. And yeah, people point to it as the reason, but they're not looking at why it's the reason. And it's a lack of rotation, like you said.
Can I play devil's advocate for a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Daniel, we are in MLS.
Yes.
And MLS does allow for a team who's had a pretty poor season to still make the playoffs.
I know.
So is it okay to just write off a couple games a season? Because I think we do, and I'm not saying we did that here, but is it okay to kind of lean more into the Open Cup and say, well, if we lose Dallas, we lose Dallas, we have the international break, whatever?
I think if you're a team like Seattle that's got a history of winning stuff, then yeah, you can. When you're a club that hasn't won anything, then I think you've got to build brick by brick and become a good solid team. And when I say a good solid team, I don't just mean 11 guys in the field. I mean 22 guys that, you know, you gradually build, put into a system, gradually develop so that you can change those 22 guys and be reasonably confident that you'll win. Then you can start competing on multiple fronts. But I don't think this club is in that position yet. Seattle have done it over years, and I accept that. But the fact is that a team like them, they can do it because they have it's always going to be a temporary blip, a one or two game, you know, week where they won't get a win. With Orlando, we're talking four home losses already all this season and so many points dropped. And that's where my concern is. It's not so much with this one result. It's more about the pattern of drop points at home. And that, to me, is evidence in itself that you can't be writing games off when you're not good enough to win the games you need to. When you're good enough to win the games you need to, then we can talk about writing a game off. But it's kind of like it's a frustrating thing for me because you can't take points for granted. And I think the better chance of success is trying to, like I said, build the better squad, but try and stretch over a whole season rather than into, you know, a handful of games in a cup that you're not guaranteed to win. Like you said, they might not even, I don't think they'll beat Nashville at home after what I saw against Dallas. You know, Dallas were okay. They were good on counterattack, but Nashville's specialty is defending with a low block and getting the result however they need to. I think they're a better team than Dallas, though.
Well, I'll raise you. I think Nashville and Miami Nashville will line up similar to how Miami lined up against us.
Mm-hmm.
And Miami started the game with Higuain, who is a net negative in the attack, right? As soon as Campagna came on, the whole game changed. And honestly, we were Halliday's hair away from losing the game at the last second.
Exactly.
And Campagna was great, and Nashville's going to come in there with CJ Sapong, Hany Mukhtar, maybe Orlando Leal back, Godoy, Davis in the midfield, Dax McCarty in the midfield. Like, we didn't, again, I know we looked and we did dominate possession and we dominated the Miami game, but we did not create nearly enough for the players on the pitch we had compared to the players on the pitch they had. That's what I mean by I don't think we played well against Miami.
You're talking about a team in Miami as well that's handicapped. I mean, yes, by their own actions, but still handicapped. They're a team that's had a severe budget reduction and hence a squad depth issue because of that. And yet, Orlando still struggled to put them away. And
yeah, it shouldn't have taken 120 minutes anyways, and it did. I think, by the way, going back to my devil's advocate thing, I think it's a weak mentality to have to go into games saying it's okay if we lose, and I hope we're not doing that. It feel again, I'm sure it's not happening, but sometimes, man, it feels like we do that. Not saying we did that here. I kind of look at the NYCFC game last year where we put a bunch of nobody's on the pitch really and got spanked 5-0. But yeah. Let's talk about transition defense, because transition is where we got hurt this game. Transition is where we got hurt against LAFC. Transition is where we got hurt against Cincinnati. Why are we struggling running back to goal to not stop these attacks? Is it that we're only remembering, or is it that I'm only highlighting transition defense because transitions are always dangerous and sometimes teams are going to score? Or are we just really struggling? Another one is the second goal against New York Red Bulls.
I think good teams know how to pick other teams off. And, you know, the MLS is a very methodical league, I think. I would probably argue it's more methodical than some of its European counterparts, you know. And teams will often frustrate, play a bit deeper, play on the quick counter. And, you know, it's easy. You just basically let, even with Orlando having the ball against Miami and such, or against Dallas, I mean, Dallas just picked the moments, you know, let the ball come to them, let it do the work, and then just quickly break. And Orlando tactically are not set up to deal with that. You know, we never leave enough players back. You know, and we don't have enough defensive-minded players on the field, in my opinion. You know, ones that have the discipline to hold the position. I think I was talking to you at the end of the game that, you know, we should be trying to find a way of, you know, maybe if we're going to press and throw the fullbacks forward and try and get into attack, then we need to find a way of getting a third man back and making a bit more of a line that can be a bit more sturdier in transition. But it's always often just the two centre backs, and it's three or four versus two or versus three or whoever. You just the odds are you're just not going to prevail, you know. And then Gillespie kind of didn't have a great game either, so he picked that one night where he was, you know, on the counter attack to defend. He picked that one game to make a couple of mistakes as well. You're just leaving too much to chance. You can't sit there and say, oh, we'll just keep the two at the back because Pedro will bail us out. It's not fair on him, but if he has a bad game, then the whole system just falls.
When Pareja first came in, we talked a lot about, we were playing possession in the final third. It felt like we were playing very safe. This was a constant theme of discussion. And one of the reasons I raised was, I feel like we might be playing safe so we don't get hit on the counter. So we don't lose the ball and get hit on transition. Well, now I feel like we're still not playing much more dangerous than we were 2 years ago in terms of pushing bodies forward, in terms of leaving spaces behind. I feel like, you know, João Moutinho isn't pushing as high as he once did. Maybe Juan's pushing a little higher, but we have a six now instead of a double pivot. So maybe that's a little bit more dangerous, and maybe that's where we're struggling. But I think Moutinho kind of cancels that out. We're not playing more dangerous. We're not playing more direct. We're not pushing more bodies forward. And yet we're struggling more in transition now than we were 2 years ago. And we're still playing safe, in my opinion.
I'd love to see what your dangerous team would look like then, if this is safe. Because if we
play, it's not like we're going 2-3-5. We've got the three at the back, we got the two in midfield, and then we've got the five lanes.
If your team was playing with chaos and you think this is safe, then God help us, I tell you.
Well, do you not think this is like a standard cautious approach.
I didn't see anything cautious. The only caution I kind of felt was that our heart rates might go up a bit too high with the anger that we're feeling at, you know, throwing away a game. I didn't see anything safe. I saw quite a lot of percentage stuff, percentage passes, you know, which I'm not a big fan of. Like I said, but a bit too much, just players just lacking the discipline. Like you say, with Pereira, we're giving the ball away, just lacking the discipline to take a look and to make the smart choice, you know?
So, I guess when I say safe, Daniel, I think I mean more in terms of the passes we're attempting and the spaces that we're pushing players into. Are we making runs in behind and leaving ourselves exposed at the back? I think we've got our bases covered at the back. I really do. I think we have the center backs and we have João Moutinho stay back. We have Mendes in the midfield. And like for most teams, that's usually what they do. They have the three, they have the two in the midfield. So it would be one of Pereira or Pereira. And in most cases, it'll probably be Pereira. But sometimes it's whether it's on the right or the left, which one stays back. And then you have the five lanes in attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think when I say safe, I think more of, are we trying combinations in that zone 14 area to try and get through? Or are we pushing it out wide to the wings and trying to get the crosses in? The crossing option is less effective, but maybe a little bit more safe. We're trying to build in zone 4 and 2, not zone 3, you know, in the middle zone. That's kind of what I mean by safe. Not necessarily do we have 3 at the back versus 4 when building play.
Got it. I understand now. I think your principles are fine. I think I get what you're saying, but number one, we don't have decent enough crossing in the team for the strategy to keep playing out wide to work. And second, I just don't think we have the quality in defence to deal with it. I think the players are in the right positions for it, but I just don't think they're ultimately, you know, good enough to play, you know, because they're basically, when you're playing in a transition like that, you're basically having to play, you know, man-to-man, one-to-one, you know? That's what it's going to come down to. And I've always had doubts with Moutinho that he's not, you know, quick enough. And if you'll notice, Dallas did exploit that left side channel of the defence quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. But,
you know, in fact, the second goal came from that channel. You know,
and there was a shot early on that looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
I think it was Areola running off the back of Janssen and then getting a near post shot on Galese who saved it.
That's right. So that relationship there between Janssen and Moutinho, you know, he needs some work, right? I've never...
It shouldn't,
but it does. And, you know, I've never been 100% confident in Moutinho. You know, I don't think he's a terrible player. I just don't think he's... I think there's options out there at left back they could get, you know, that would improve. And, you know, secondly, we, you know, centre-back depth again. I don't think there's anyone in the squad other than Antonio that's a leader. Janssen's good, but I think he is prone to mistakes. And then you've got, I'm not sure Schlegel's quite the answer, and Williams is too young to probably throw in. They need a centre-back. And you put the better quality players in those positions, then, yeah, what you're saying is probably going to stand true. But while we don't have those players to pick from, and we don't have the quality when we go on transition and try and get the ball in the box, then, you know, then your system falls apart, you know?
Yeah, and our system's been falling apart
mm-hmm.
a lot recently.
I mean, we have like on the subs bench, you know, oftentimes we've got four or five strikers or wingers on the bench. And then you look at the defenders and you're thinking, well, who have we got to come in if we get another serious injury, you know?
Oh, yeah, we're hoping for the summer transfer window to come.
But this should have been done in January. Like, you know, especially with the players that they cut and the slots they freed up, they should have had this depth resolved before the first game of the season. So that's just
I go back to something Chase said, which I really liked. And he said that creating an MLS squad is like an art. And because it is very difficult to craft a squad. And we've taken this risk a couple seasons in a row now where we've gone with Carlos, Janssen, and Schlegel with Smith as kind of a backup. And it would have been nice to have Kamal Miller around, but not to be. And this time the risk finally caught up to us. Carlos went down for a couple months. Janssen got suspended a game for yellow card accumulation. Schlegel got red card, so he's out. We're playing Kyle Smith at center back. He's the culprit on the second goal for keeping the guy onside. He was trying to play the offside trap, played it too late. It was a risk. It's a risk that they've done before and unfortunately just came back. But now in hindsight, we're saying, hey, you probably should have strengthened there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's like when you have a team has an obvious need, then it's negligent to ignore it, I feel. And even some of the results in the preseason, you know, they kind of indicated that some of those needs needed to be met as well. And, you know, I can say the same, you know, I'm sure we can say the same about our teams in England that we support, that critical needs have not been met and it can be costly, you know. And it's, at the end of the day, yeah, we've got God knows how many options in the final third, but, you know, could we have maybe spared some of that money on one of those options and just, you know, brought in a really good, solid centre-back? And somebody else to play at left back. I don't know. To me, every other team seems to be able to do it. So the answer to that is they should have been doing it.
All right. Well, let's quickly talk about Galese here before we get into questions. Don't want to get into the land of speculation by any means. But I say that and then I say but. Chris Mueller last season had a pretty off year going into a year where he was leaving with contract talks kind of not happening or contract being discussed. Contract year, basically. And Galese is in a contract year, I believe. And he's been fine this season. I don't think he's been amazing. I don't think he's been, you know, light years ahead of any other goalkeeper in MLS. He's just been a decent, above average goalkeeper, like he's been for us always. But there's been a couple times where I've been like, Galese could have done a little bit better with that shot. Could have palmed it away instead of palmed it to the middle. Could have been more commanding there. And this game, his performance was okay. The third goal is poor from him. The second goal, you can maybe come up with an excuse as to why he was out of position, but at the end of the day, he was out of position. Do you think the contract is maybe playing a role in his performances this season and possibly last night, or do you think just an off day?
It's I'm more inclined to say it's an off day. I think, I mean, we don't know what goes through his mind, you know, like it is a contract year, so it's only he knows what his motivations are, you know, for this coming year. But I'm inclined to say it's an off day, and I think that part of it is that there's just an over reliance on him as well. And every player, it doesn't matter how good a player you are, every player is going to be always potentially at risk for a downturn in form. Was it Harry Kane, I think, in the last Premier League season, not the one just gone, but the one before? He got one goal in 17 games. Remember that?
I think that was this past
Was it this
season.
past year? Okay,
It was
maybe it
the
was.
beginning because he had, he was trying to go to Man City. Levy wouldn't let him go. He wasn't training with the team at one point, I think.
So, like every player, it doesn't matter how good you are, like every player is subject to that particular, downturn in form. So I'm not going to be on his case for that so much because that can happen to anyone. But I think in the scheme of things, the team is over reliant on him as well. And, maybe even subconsciously, it's like, well, he's just been left exposed a little bit too much lately that, you just inevitably you're gonna play badly at one game. We'll soon know. I mean, when the next game comes around, we'll see how he does. But maybe the break will do him some good.
Oh, I think it will. Although he'll be with Peru, I think, in a really big game to try and make the World Cup.
Yeah, but
So
it's
he
still an
doesn't get a
environment.
mental break.
Not really, but it's an environmental change, and at least he might benefit just from being away for a while,
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just weird to me how some players act, or not act, but perform in the midst of contract talks. I do think it has an effect on them. Not saying it's intentional or anything, but I think it does have an effect on them. His season's been pretty bland for me. It's been pretty average. Maybe we are just over relying on him, and some of the saves aren't going his way like they once would have. Maybe he's just gotten a step slower with another year of age as well, which can be very, very crucial for goalkeepers. So all in all, he just had a poor night.
I'd be willing to put it down to that for now, and then going back to what I said about patterns, if he has a couple more games like that, then I think you have to be a little more concerned about him. But his defense did not do him any favors either. It was open season for Dallas that last 20 minutes, on his goal. And sometimes it's just like, even if you don't actively think to yourself, I'm fed up with this. I mean, at some point he can't keep making saves. He made a really good save at 2-1. Do you remember where he
Kept
dived
us
to
in the
his
game.
left? It was a great save, full stretch save. And that's what he can do. He's very good at that. But he can only do that so much. I mean, you should never, as a soccer team, and I've never understood why fans think like this, but you should never ever be happy that you can rely on your goalkeeper to keep bailing you out, because that means your team is conceding not only possession but shots on goal. So you're happy with the highlight reels that your goalkeeper's gonna produce to go on YouTube, but you're seemingly happy with the fact that your team can't hold the game. Ideally, you don't want your goalkeeper to be doing much work at all. You want them to have a nice quiet day and have one or two saves here and there. But again, that's all about perception, and I don't want to get into that. So.
Let's get into the questions here. We've got some good ones, so let's get the funny one out of the way. At OC underscore Scully says, does Joe Dickerson pee sitting down?
Well, I heard that you do. I don't know what that's got to do with this. For Joe Dickerson, I mean, look, if you're gonna, kind of have a, pee sitting down, maybe after a long stressful day, maybe that's when it's deserved. But I don't know, like, I don't know. What a random question that is. He probably does. He probably does. I'll say that he does, and I think what he does is that he probably does it, and then he'll go on to Google, and he'll Google his own name, probably have a look for the match reports, see how many mentions he's gotten, and then he'll go on to Twitter under one of the random accounts he's made and start arguing with football fans about
The
the decisions
calls.
in the game. Yeah, not that it's him, but he'll be defending the referees, and he'll probably be sat there on the toilet for about 30 minutes just arguing with everybody that he can find. And then Googling himself to see how many times he's got mentioned. Because Because, well, you know, it is referees. Some of them just love the attention, you know?
He's definitely one of them. He sent off Thiago Almada after the final whistle, which is something you can do. That is a part of the laws of the game. And I believe Thiago Almada, like, bumped into him, like, to kind of, like, go chest to chest with him. And that is the second time in a row a player has gotten in his face. So
he didn't bump into him while they were sat in the toilet, did he? Because that could have been a bit weird.
That would have gone a little bit weird, yeah. So Thiago Almada got sent off. So Joe Dickerson is clearly having some issues, and Pro needs to look at not having him center ref some games, definitely. But yeah, final answer, Joe Dickerson, P, sitting down.
He does, and he looks himself up on Google and Twitter and occasionally Instagram.
He's got to, you know, make sure he's looking good in those green suits.
Yeah, definitely.
NJ Tommy at Aguay Goat. How much more depth is actually needed to be considered among the elite? We're going to have a theme here when it comes to depth.
That squad's as deep as a puddle right now, so I think...
Is it though?
Look, there's plenty of names and plenty of players, but if you took out... I saw somebody wrote on Twitter, and I don't know who it is, or I think I do, but I'm not going to say who it was, but somebody suggested that they just take out five players on the halftime and just change them out, you know, and whatever, and, like, almost treat the games like a pre-season game. And, you know, the principle is fine, but are those five players going to have the same impact that the five that you took out? So it's all good and well having names on the bench, but how many of them are actually good enough, you know?
It depends the five, you know. Tesho, Pato, Facundo was on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was there?
Exactly.
Oh my gosh, who else was there?
I'm just looking at the watch right now. Yep. The fact that you couldn't name the five
Halliday,
off the top
of, I guess, yeah.
The fact you couldn't name the five off the top of your head just explains my point.
Yeah.
We need a lot of depth. We need not so much names and numbers, but we need quality depth. And there is wisdom in going with a slightly smaller squad, but with more quality. Like, instead of filling up your 30 roster spots for the sake of filling up 30 roster spots, of which maybe six or seven are never going to see the bench, you know? Why not try and fill up 25 spots, but with, you know, 22 good players and then a few outside players that, you know, you think can come in and learn, you know? And again, it comes down to squad building. I just don't see any evidence of that. And, you know, the team, to answer the question, the team needs a centre-back, a defensive midfield player, and, I mean, could you argue they need another striker, maybe another central striker? If you're talking about players that can come in and improve the dynamic of your team and contribute, then that's probably what I would do.
Well, we have Pato to do that. We have Pato for central striker.
Yeah, has he done it enough? Or is he more of a 10? Is he more of a deep line forward? I'm talking like an out-and-out striker.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
I like
Pato. I got a lot of respect for Pato and his ability, but I don't consider him as a natural, you know, in the way that Orlando typically sets up. I don't consider him as the leading front man, you know what I mean? Like, he's what was that?
I will apologize. In my mind, that came off as way more sarcastic than it did, because I was like, yeah, Pato's not a number nine.
I mean, he could, you're right, you know, if he hits form, I think he'd get 20 goal contributions over a season, but that's if he hits form. I mean, he's very dependent on that. I don't think he's got anywhere close to... He's got two goals, right? So, is it two goals or just one?
He's got one in the Open Cup, and he scored against Montreal in the first game of the season.
So he hasn't scored...
then he scored against LAFC.
Okay, so one against LAFC. So he's got two in 13 MLS games then.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Tesho, you know, I like Tesho. I think he's a good squad player, but he's not scored yet. So, you know, you've got... You know, there's a case there to be made for another striker, certainly.
Yeah.
As well as a couple of defenders, and in my opinion, a defensive midfielder, someone who is a bit different to the guys they have now. You know, can just play very, very, you know, defensively, and maybe pop in at centre back as well. Someone a bit more versatile, you know.
That's what
I would do.
Yeah, sorry. To answer Tommy's question, he says how much more depth is actually needed to be considered among the elite. How much more I think you outlined.
Four.
I think the total depth needs to be 18 to 19 guys you feel comfortable starting in your starting 11 week in, week out.
Yeah.
So how many do you think we have? I'd say 14, 15.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I'm at with that.
And there is, obviously, there's going to be a little bit of a drop-off no matter what, but because you have a starting 11 for a reason. But, yeah, I'd say 18, 19 would be elite numbers. So, yeah, four or five more sounds about right.
Yeah, they go with the model that, you know, a lot of clubs go with, you know, 18 or 19 plus four, with the plus four being, you know, you're promising young players from the academy, you know. And I know Orlando's working on that, and if they can keep OCB kind of running for a few years, then that's going to add to your depth, because those are the players that, you know, you can have them playing in the B team and making up numbers on the bench, but you still want to be able to have, you know, if, in this league where you've got nine subs? You've got nine subs, right? So
yeah.
So yeah, you want to be looking at least six or seven of those guys, thinking that, yeah, those guys I can put in any time and they'll make a positive difference. And what you're seeing at the moment is, you know, to accommodate one player to put them in, you're either changing two positions to do it, and that's also not a good strategy either. That's just an indicator that we don't have the depth.
Yeah, I think we went into the season with like with everyone healthy, we had a good enough amount of depth to get through a season, but we just, the injuries really caught up with us, and now we're looking at depth and saying, oh my God, this is a huge issue. So that's, and the suspensions haven't helped either. Like, we have got to stop getting suspensions. So maybe we didn't go into a season with enough depth. So I guess I talked myself out of my point there.
Well,
looked better with the starting 11, everybody healthy.
Oh, your depth argument, though. I mean, I would say we were two players short, and those two players would have been a centre-back and a full-back. If we'd have had those at the beginning of the season, then I would have said the squad is pretty well set up for most challenges, you know? Minus the, you know, mindfucks that, you know, decide that they're going to mouth off to referees and accumulate cards and, you know, give the odd two-footed tackle away and whatever. Those things you just can't really account for, because they're going to happen, but you don't know when. But other eventualities would have been covered, I think, if we'd have had those two extra players.
Yep. OC Fan TV, go ahead, give the guys the follow. Go ahead and give the guys a follow. They're doing some great content over there. Did we do enough bringing in Jake Mulroney, or should we have tried to bring in more depth? Feel like that really showed on Saturday. I feel like the answer there is yes or no. We did not do enough just bringing in Jake. It's hard with the injuries. It's hard with the squad and how bloated it is with internationals. I think we're near max in terms of cap spend and GAM and TAM and all that wham bam stuff. So it's difficult, but I think we should have figured out a way, even if it was a free agent signing, which we don't really do. We don't really do MLS free agent signings, and I think we could have this season. So,
yep.
Anyways, here's a good one. At Vadim, bunch of numbers. Should fans expect more from this team realistically?
Well, I gave my answer earlier. My answer is a yes. Should expect more. You should always expect more. I mean, like I said, if you're happy losing, then you can always expect more, right?
Well, I think the spirit of the question, Daniel, is more like, kind of like, is this our level? You know, fifth, sixth, you know, winning some, losing some, inconsistent. Is this our level, or should we be expecting more? Like, are we better than what we're seeing right now? I think that was the spirit of the question.
I think that's how I read it. I think they are better than what we're seeing.
Interesting.
I think the team is good enough to, you know, if you're dominating a game after 65 minutes and controlling it, then you need to be able to see it through to the 90. I think they can. I just don't think they've got the right instructions to do it. You know, and there's times, I mean, there's times we've been frustrated with Oscar Pereira when he goes to some games and he's already locked the door at the beginning of the game. And then there's games like Dallas where you think, okay, Oscar, now you need to lock the door, you know? You know, lock the door, play it a bit smarter, just handle the circumstances, you know? And he doesn't do it, so.
Yeah, I liked that he, you know, second half we went for it, you know, because I think he knew that it was going to be last 20 minutes, last 30 minutes were going to be a struggle. So I liked that strategy.
No, and I agree with that, but.
But you know, yeah. When the goal didn't go in, you need to have a kind of reset and, okay, now we're going to kind of lock the door. Okay, so I said interesting when you first answered, but I largely agree with that. The players we have, I think we can expect more from. I do find myself wanting a little bit more from the coach. We're really not. We're playing a lot of games on margins. We're playing a lot of games on one or two big chances. We're not creating a lot of big chances, I feel like, each game. And so when we don't score those big chances, which big chances are, I feel like they're 30%, 40% chances. Like, it's not a given that you're going to score them. It's just a higher percent chance of scoring than a regular chance, which is obviously always a not very high percentage chance. So we need to create more of those is basically what I'm saying. And the players we have, I think we have the tools to do that, and they're not being put in the right spots to succeed for me.
That's pretty much where I'm at with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't see it changing either, personally. So for me, my answer to that was, this is who we are right now with the players that we have and with the coach that we have. This is who we are. We're going to win some games because we're going to score those margins. We're going to lose some games because we're not going to score the goals on those margins. And teams are going to score on the margins we give them, and sometimes they're not. That's just how I see our team right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same boat. Like, you know, it's a little frustrating, but it is what it is, right?
Right. At Moraima _4. I don't know what to ask after this one. What do you think we could have done to avoid what happened, even with tired legs and missing starters?
Simple. Make the ball work for you. Play a bit more defensively and just, like I say, lock the door. Like, if we don't get that second goal in that first 10 to 15 minutes in the second half, then you've just got to try and play a bit more smart, you know? That's it. That's all he had to do. I'm pretty confident that a positive result would have been gained had they done that.
Yeah. I mean, it was literally like, we were playing well, we were fine, we were comfortable, we were having waves of attacks, and it was just one sloppy play, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 1-1, and then it was just, I mean, from there, it did feel like, okay, this game's over. Like it didn't feel like this was going to end 1-1 or 2-1 us. Like, it did not feel like we were getting another goal in this match after that, and Dallas just ran all over us. And 2-1, 3-1, good night. They're celebrating in our locker room, posting pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Really disappointing.
Did they bump into that referee while he was on the toilet?
Maybe, maybe.
Was he there as well, sat on the bog reading the newspaper?
Maybe he had to come see our failure. At Jimmy underscore SLC for the last question of the night. What has to change to make our offense work? Or do we have the wrong pieces to have a threatening offense?
That's a good question, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, chemistry is a part of it. You know, you've got to hope that, you know, almost midway through the season, they're going to start finding that soon. So, chemistry is one thing. I feel like the team gets changed around quite a bit, which doesn't help. You know, but they need just a little bit more quality, especially with service into the box as well. You know, and it's, I mean, this is a, like I say, we're in a position where nothing's really going to change unless they recruit, right? So, I think, I mean, what do you think, Gavin? What would you do?
I find my mind wandering to our right back spot. I really do. I find my mind wandering to maybe a Kyle Smith right back, right center back, with Juan as a right wing back, right winger, and pushing him further up the pitch. Because if we're going to use Juan, if we just have to for whatever reason, because clearly we can't live without him, then I would rather push him a little bit higher. He's starting very deep for an attacking player. Like, he's starting high for a right back, but he's starting deep for an attacking player, and we use him as an attacking player. So I'm thinking in build-up, Kyle Smith, or sorry, defensively, we have a back three, Kyle Smith, Schlegel, and Janssen, right? And then as we move forward, that kind of turns into a back four-ish, or maybe João Moutinho pushes into the midfield to make it a three-back, with the three being Kyle Smith, Schlegel, and Janssen. Juan is more of a right winger, right wing back player, and that helps us push a couple yards up the pitch. But then you have literally all of your defensive pieces out there, and I don't know if that's possible. So that goes back to the depth conversation. So then I think, okay, so then I would say start Kyle Smith, push your right winger higher, mm-hmm. have a more traditional right winger, or, you know, maybe have Pato go out there and play as like an inverted winger where he can come in and have combinations over there, or maybe even just stick with Urso because he's been doing fine over there too. But I think Smith unlocks us the ability to push further up the pitch. I think we try and compensate for having Juan's ability to get in behind, which is very important. You know my thoughts on getting in behind. But I think we compensate for that with him starting deeper, and that makes it take longer for him to get up the pitch. And in the attack, timing is very important, because defenses get set so quickly nowadays. 2 seconds can make a massive difference. And no matter how fast Juan is, if he's starting deep, he is a second away. And that second changes everything. I think we need to push higher up the pitch. I think Kyle Smith unlocks that for us. I really do.
I tend to agree with that. Or you can, you know, find someone in the midfield that can also play defensively and maybe form a three at the back. If you're going to push both your fullbacks forward, and like you say, if one has to play, then that would be the other solution. But yeah, you can't continue to play the way we are with just leaving two guys at the back, basically, you know?
My other option that I was thinking of the other day is, again, Smith at right back. But our right side is more of an inverted free-ish right side role, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I feel like that's suited for Maurizio Pereira. And then you just throw like Mendez in the midfield or Urso.
Yeah.
Right? Like, And then you have Faku be the so then we have two hubs. We have you either go through Faku on the left, and he's the one who you're going to interplay with and combine with and try and create chances on the left. And on the right, it's through Maurizio Pereira. And like, yes, we want to get those two close together sometimes. I get that strategy. Get your good players close together. But that's not working. It's not working at all. And I think having two hubs in the attack to go through can possibly help. And something's got to change. I'm really excited to see this New England match, to see if, are we going to change something, or are we just going to roll the same crap out there that isn't working?
Well, we'll soon see. You know, New England's a pretty strong team, and it's away from home, so we'll see, won't we?
We will indeed. All right. Daniel, thanks for chatting with me. Really disappointing match, but we got to keep our head up, and hopefully we can do the business against New England. Where can our listeners find you at?
Bucketman1982 on Twitter. That's my handle.
Good stuff, good stuff. Y'all can find me at LionsBlog1. Feel free to send hate my way.
Well, send it to me.
Here.
Send it to me. That'd be nice. So, yeah, send it to me. I'll have a go.
Daniel's bored. He hasn't had enough controversy lately.
I haven't had any controversy for years. I've been good.
I don't believe that at all. All right, well, you have a good rest of your night, my friend, and as always, vamos Orlando.
Spins right, comes back left, Matty shoots, oh!